Napa Know How.
Keeping it simple is usually a good thing. And when it comes to rewards programs, keeping it simple is always a good thing. That's why we made the Napa Rewards program effortless. All you need is your phone number to start saving on the parts and tools you need. Then we automatically give you $5 off your next purchase for every $100 you spend. So start saving today with Napa Rewards. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Joseph Potasnik, Rabbi Eric Greenbeck, their family, their friends, and we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends and family and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Folks, we feel very blessed and humbled today by two extraordinary guests. First, we have Rabbi Joseph Potasnik, the Executive Vice President of the New York Board of Rabbis, and Rabbi Eric J. Greenberg, a leading interfaith expert, communication and program director, and an international award-winning reporter. They will address anti-Semitism and how it is on the rise yet again. Perhaps it will leave you with the feeling, what can I do? How can I make a difference? To quote Nelson Mandela on Israel and anti-Semitism, this is how I feel about Israel. Again and again, we have to fight anti-Semitism. Again and again, we have to fight hard for its survival. Again and again, we have to fight against all odds, surrounded on all sides by its enemies. Again and again, they are dragged into wars they do not want, while the world blames them for those wars. It is a never-ending battle just for the right to exist. Rabbi Potasnik, let's start with you. You're right in the forefront. You're right there. You know what's going on. Please share with us all around the world how serious it is and if there's anything any of us can do to make a difference.
Joyce, I thank you so much for having me and having Rabbi Greenberg, a close colleague, on as well. You know, we always try to find some kind of light in the midst of the darkness, and it's very difficult here because we've seen the increase in anti-Semitism. We've seen an increase in a lot of hate assaults around the country. It is commonplace to walk by a house of worship here in New York, a Jewish house of worship, and also some of the mosques and some of the churches, and to see police cars stationed out in front. I remember when I first came to this city some 40 years ago, I didn't see that. Today, if you go by and you don't see a police vehicle or a police person there, you say, well, something's wrong, something's missing. So we are living in a very, very difficult time. I can tell you that we are very dismayed, very disheartened that we're still talking about this subject. I'm a child of Holocaust survivors, and I have to come on the air and talk to you and your audience about a sickness that we had hoped would have been cured after the horrific period of the Holocaust is shocking. We never stop talking about anti-Semitism. It's like a recurrent theme. And then you have those in the Muslim community who talk about the increase against Muslims that we've seen. Those in the LGBTQ community who talk about, you know, their victimization. You can go across the board, and all the different, you know, minority groups have seen a dramatic increase. But anti-Semitism goes to the top of the list in terms of the number of attacks on Jewish institutions, number of threats. And finally, we saw a cemetery in University City, Missouri, that was desecrated. This is not the America that it should be. I do want to say that what is heartening are the responses of members of the interfaith communities. Firstly, yesterday, and Rabbi Greenberg and I were present, as well as many other leaders, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, issued a very strong statement denouncing and also making certain additions to legislation where $25 million is being proposed in additional security needs, where rewards are being posted for those who can give information leading to the prosecution, arrest and prosecution of people who are perpetrating these acts. So I think the governor should be commended for doing much to combat it. The mayor of the city has spoken about it. The president spoke about it last week, condemned anti-Semitism. But it's going to take a real cooperative effort to send a strong message that we are together on this. And one of the things I've said to the governor's people, as well as to others, is we expect elected officials to issue proclamations, pronouncements. That comes with the territory. But I think people also need to see grassroots. speaking out forcefully and being seen in a meaningful way. For example, I think now at JCCs, when there are programs, we need to have an interfaith representation there. At synagogues, at mosques, we need to have an interfaith gathering there. In other words, people need to see that this is our problem. It's not just a Jewish problem. I know, you know, we're pained by it, but so are others. And I think if we can at least do that, we may not cure the problem, but by caring about the problem, we may diminish it somewhat. And we need to get into the schools. As you know, when people are apprehended in some of these crimes, there are 16, 17, sometimes even younger. We need to get into the schools. We need to get into places where young people gather to show them that we do work together, that we do respect one another, that this is not the way, this is not business as usual. So silence, you know, in Jewish tradition, when you're silent, it means you agree. We can't have people who close their eyes, don't see the tears, don't hear the voices. So as long as people are strong, there is some hope. But I was talking with Abe Foxman yesterday, who for years led the ADL. I said, in all the years at the ADL and all of the other people involved in Jewish defense agencies, we've never found a cure for anti-Semitism. He says, you're right. And he says, I kind of give up finding a cure. I just hope I can bring the numbers down. And that's what we try to do, bring them down somewhat. Very, very, it's a shameful, sad story, but we're not going to turn our backs. And we're not going to, you know, thankfully we have a state of Israel. Thankfully we have proud Jews. Thankfully we have people who are not afraid to stand up and protest. And this is a time for our community to be as responsive as possible. Look, our history has shown that we're there for others. What I can tell you is right now there are others who stand with us. So we can't say that we're alone in this. We can't say nobody cares. There are people who care. As you probably read, the members of the Muslim community raised money for the repair of those stones in Missouri. So that was a positive statement that we will be there for you. You've been there for us. And together we'll make it better. But I wish I could tell you this is the last chapter.
Rabbi, I just want to say, on the heels of what you said, it's not just about the Jews standing up to speak for the Jews. We need the support of everyone. I want to share my favorite quote from Martin Niemöller. He was a prominent Protestant pastor who emerged as an outspoken public foe of Adolf Hitler and spent the last 7 years of Nazi rule in concentration camps. This is his quote. First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. So on the heels of what you said, I wanted to share that.
Yeah, well, what does it tell? What does it teach us? That hatred may start with one group, but doesn't stop with one group. It may start with Jews. It doesn't stop with Jews. So we're seeing a disease that unfortunately has spread to too many places. I mean, just imagine you're sending your kids to the JCC. You're sending your kids to a Hebrew school. And now there's been a threat. Now there's been a verbal assault, so to speak. One of the leaders of the JCC in Albany said yesterday, it's hurting people withdrawing. People are saying, look, I'm not going to be a member. I'm not going to send my kids to the program when there is this threat that is hanging, you know, over us. So it has an impact, has a serious impact. But once again, with leadership from the top, with good friends in the grassroots, with clergy working together, with partnerships, we're going to send a strong message. And hopefully that will create more security. In addition to the physical security, you need the kind of emotional security where people feel there are others who care about us. This is not, you know, the way things were when we were all alone. There are others who care, and that's the way it needs to be during this critical period.
That's absolutely true, and I can't stress enough, along with you, the importance of other people participating to stop the anti-Semitism. Edmund Burke said the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Of course, I add, and women. And also, he said nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could do only a little. Voltaire said every man is guilty of all the good he did not do. Back to you, Rabbi.
Well, you know, there's a book called Rescue in Denmark, and the author points out the Danes really have a stellar record when it comes to rescue of Jews. And after the war, when you ask people, why did you get involved? The response in Denmark was, well, what else could I do? Not what can I do and do nothing, but what else could I do and do something? So I think you're finding across denominational lines, all different faith constituencies, people responding in a very, very positive way, saying, we stand with you. We're all Jews in this. Just as Jews are, we're all Muslims when there's been attacks here. We had African-American leadership at the press conference yesterday saying, look, we're not going to remain silent. We know what it is to go through a form of persecution, a form of hatred directed at us. We're standing when it's directed at you. So it shows that we have built relationships over the years. I know sometimes people minimize, you know, those building steps that we've taken. They say, ah, you know, what does it matter? You're standing with other people on various occasions. Of course it matters. We wouldn't be together with others if we didn't do what we did over the years. Been some great leaders. We stand on their shoulders. So I think that we should be proud of the closeness that we enjoy with our interfaith partners. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to be concerned about what's happening around the country. Very, very very, very sad commentary. Here we are. We're so technologically advanced. We're so sophisticated, so progressive, and yet we're talking about anti-Semitism. And the internet has contributed to the problem as well. You see the hate materials that are promulgated on various sites. You see the messages that are sent out with impunity. You can say whatever you want. You can speak out against any people, defame individuals, and get away with it. And by the way, let me not forget, what we're seeing now is one form of hatred. We've seen this, and we see it on campuses. You and I have spoken about what's going on campuses when speaker after speaker who happens to be pro-Israel or happens to present a contrary point of view than what some people think is their point of view, they're shouted down. They're heckled. So we can talk about free speech, but free speech to some people only means that you're free to speak when you agree with me. Otherwise, I don't want to hear you, and I won't let you speak.
And that seems to be very prevalent with this new administration, very prevalent, unfortunately. But getting into that, we've discussed that on prior shows, and there's still so much to be said about what is going on. I just, can't ever forget the two words, never again, never again. But this is where it started when it happened the first time in Nazi Germany. This is the seeds of it, where the anti-Semitism, the rhetoric came out, stopped the flow of the presses. It is said that whoever controls the press controls the people. So we all have to take a stand up and be counted.
Well, look at the tone, look at the temperature during the presidential campaign. How ugly was that? How many things were said that were so insulting, so demonizing? You had reporters, many of whom were Jewish, getting hate mail. Anybody who published a story that was seen as being critical of a candidate was labeled as a traitor. That kind
of... And a liar.
A liar, a fake, a phony, whatever the words are, was demonized. So what happens? You're demonized. That means you're different. Now that you're different, you're now, pushed to the outside. Now that you're on the outside, you don't belong to us. Now we have the right to do with you as we see fit. So I think the administration has to look within, seriously look within, and to say, have we done anything to contribute? Has our rhetoric done anything to contribute to the behavior that's going on today? That's a question they should be asking. I don't hear it being asked, but it's a question they should be asking, as every administration should.
But what is going on, like you said, the toxic debates and all that went on, and how America was made wrong in front of the world, wrong on so many counts, so-called judges, all those things, and all we heard was the praise of Vladimir Putin. So what's happening now? The world is looking in, listening, and laughing at us. What happened to the respect we had? I've met people from different cultures that came here from different parts of the world. I met a Canadian the other day. I said, what are the Canadians saying? Well, he says they just roll their eyes and shrug their shoulders. All over the world, our closest allies. Look what is happening here. So, yes, we have to stand up and be counted. Just like that extraordinary women's march the day after the inauguration, all over the world. And believe me, that movement is just starting to unfold. They're not going to sit down and take it.
You know, I think there's a time we don't have to yield on prioritized issues. Things that are important to us, we have to fight for and fight against when they're on the other side. At the same time, you try to build coalitions. Look, Trump is the president. Like him, not like him, he's the president. We need him to succeed if we're going to succeed. So we need to forge relationships. We try to do that through the Board of Rabbis, have relationships with members of the administration, and conveying what we think, you know, some of the issues that are, should be addressed, need to be done by the administration. We do that. We can't just say we're only going to talk to a Democratic president but not a Republican. That's dangerous for us, certainly with Israel. I mean, we cannot allow Israel to be a political football. And anti-Semitism, it can't be a political football. It can't just say, well, that's your, you caused this. We had nothing to do with it. No, this is a collective responsibility here. So I'm hoping that we will get some cooperation here from the political world, standing together and saying, we're all in this. This is our battle. That will send a strong message, I think. But we will see. Look, we are a people of hope. We are prisoners of hope in the Jewish people. That's the nature of who we are. But the fact that we're here today shows that hope has been a very, very constructive ingredient in our history. I think Rabbi Greenberg, I know, I heard him breathing heavily on the other side. I think he wants to say something.
Well, just thank you, Rabbi Pataznik. I was just going to follow up. First of all, it's leaders like Rabbi Pataznik that are showing us the way forward. Something he said before is very important. The work of interfaith, building relations, not very sexy. It's usually quiet meetings. You get to know the evangelical community, the Mormons, the Muslims, the Eastern Orthodox, etc. And you do that over a period of years, and it's very quiet work. You build those relationships, and in order to get to a point where we are today where you can, somebody like Rabbi Pataznik and myself, we could pick up a phone and have the kind of relationship where you can call the head of the church, the head of the mosque, and have, say, look, we need your help, or they can call you, we need your help. And you don't necessarily want to go for that day, but that day has come, and it's with Rabbi Pataznik's leadership that he can pick up a phone and get those leaders to join together and stand together when there's a problem facing all of us, and we're living that now, and it proves, because they are responding and we're responding to them, it proves that the work that's been done all these years quietly was worth it.
You know, Joyce, I think of a story years ago of a synagogue fire, and a number of people came to be present watching the fire, and somebody from the synagogue turned to them and said, gee, we've never seen you in the synagogue before. And they said, well, there was never a fire before. And there are people, you know, who are only present when there's a fire. And I think Rabbi Greenberg said it very well, and he's been the forefront of building coalitions. And that is that it's what you do the day after the crisis, because you know, relationships are continuous. They're not just these transitory, you know, fleeting moments where you only come together because I need you. You know, there are some people that behave that way. I know you because I need you. And when the need is not there, the knowing is not there. We can't have that to build an effective coalition of concerned who are going to combat the hatred, but also join with us on happy occasions. We've had many celebrations of life where we're there with one another. So I don't want people to think this is all crisis-driven. It's commitment-driven, and that's where we need to be. So I think people have to ask themselves, what am I doing to make this better? What is my contribution? Not let the other person do this, and I'll just watch from the sidelines, or I'll wait for the, you know, for the next catastrophe before I appear.
So true. And when people don't know the role they can play, Rabbi Potasnik, first you, is there a website? And your website, do you give people options for volunteering and contributions?
Yeah, it's funny because we're just putting up our new website as we speak. But we have a weekly e-blast. We send out all kinds of notifications. We tell people how to get involved. People call here. We got a call yesterday from someone who said, look, I know this child abuse issue is very troubling. What can I do? Who can I call? And we give out information. So we're a resource that way. I know Rabbi Greenberg gets calls, for example, on the Syrian refugee issue. Well, give me more information. I want to make an informed decision. So give me as much information as possible, because, you know, if you only read certain blogs or certain stories, you're going to get a very truncated or distorted view of what's going on. You need to get, you know, the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. So it's important to have a, you know, Rabbi Greenberg out there talking about multi-faith alliances and what's the real story. Look, everybody I talked to, for example, on the Syrian refugee issue has made the same point. As long as people are vetted, as long as there's some security standards that are maintained, I'm comfortable with it. And I know Rabbi Greenberg has introduced a number of us to a gentleman, for example, who lives in Michigan, who's a, you know, former refugee who's making a very positive contribution, not only to his community, but to the interfaith community. He's close to people in Israel. These are stories that need to be told, because otherwise, you know, if you're going to allow only one source to tell you, unfortunately, you're not going to hear all the facts. You're going to get a very distorted view, because some people have, a certain point they want to convey, and they'll twist stories to convey that point. So we got to be very careful and be very selective in gathering information and conveying information. But to add to that,
I mean, there's a story that's out today. Syrian refugees in St. Louis came to help the desecrated cemetery. Here are Syrian refugees just coming over, and they heard about what happened at the Jewish cemetery, and they showed up to try to help. That to me is just an amazing story, and it says a lot about what the people who are coming here, who are, as Rabbi Potasnik said, are well vetted, who want to be part of our society, who want to contribute. So you know, there's a lot of good underneath that we need to lift up.
Rabbi Potasnik, please tell us your website so people can access it. And I know it's in transition and you're upgrading it. What is that website?
Well, it's going to be www.nybr.org, New York Board of Rabbis, www.nybr.org. But if people want to get on our mailing list so they get the weekly blasts, we'd be happy to take that. So just, send us the information.
And they can do that through the website as well?
Not yet. Next week. But they can.
Next week, they'll have a link to that.
Yeah, they can all call you. I would urge people around the world, call Joyce Barry at any hour. I know Joyce never sleeps, so if it's 3, 4 in the morning, she doesn't mind.
Say, I'll give everyone your number since you don't have it up yet.
And I highly recommend getting the weekly blast. There's just really good information in it, and a Torah portion of the week. Life lessons that you could learn from scripture. So it's really well worth it.
Yeah. Look, Joyce,
anything,
what do you do?
Anything that emanates from Rabbi Potasnik and the New York Board of Rabbis is always well worth it.
Thank you so much. But Joyce, you do, you know, you're doing God's work by coming on the air, by exposing misinformation, and also by presenting, you know, substantive information. So we all have to do something, because otherwise we're just going to look at one another and say, my God, that never again promise was delusional. You know, we didn't know what we said when we said it. Never again has meaning, as you were, and it means it shouldn't happen to any people. I was talking to a rabbi from a community where they're majority LGBTQ, and she said, we're under attack. We're getting, you know, and by the way, she said, we didn't choose this. This is who we are. What do they want from us? If we're their kids, they may speak differently, but they lambast us and they attack us because we're deemed the other. We're deemed different. Well, we are different. So what? Tell me what I have to do if I'm different. Should I disguise myself? Find a place for me. I tell you this, Joyce. From my understanding, the LGBTQ community is not a threat to American society. Not a big threat. I think if we look at our prioritized threats, we have people up there who are serious threats, and they're not members of that community. So we got to be very careful in how we treat the other, because just think that if we were on the other side, we were on the other side, how would we want to be treated? I know
the
you
golden
want to spend some
rule
time
kicks
now.
In which you is just, unto what, others
exactly,
as you would have others do unto you. Rabbi Potashnik, as we're winding down on your part of the show, what message do you want to leave our audience?
I think all of us have to use the word we more than I, in the sense we have to be in this together. This is a battle, and you don't fight battles alone. You fight them with allies. And thankfully, through the great work, you've had Father McWeeny on, and he does good work at the Archdiocese. Now you have Rabbi Greenberg. He does great work with so many different communities. It's all about building bridges, coalitions, committees. You can't just do it alone. I don't know any problem in life that you can address alone. We are to be connected. The world may have started with the creation, you know, of one, but then there were two, and then, you know, you have a civilization. And that's why Jewish tradition, first page of the Talmud is page two. First letter of the Bible is the second letter of the alphabet. We start with two. We don't start with one, really. And I think two, we, us, they have to be commonplace in our vocabulary.
And one more thing I'm going to ask of you before we team up with Rabbi Greenberg for the second half. And if he has a generosity of time, we might go a little over if that's okay with him. Because I always love it when you conclude your portion with a prayer.
Look, help us recognize that all of us have the same spiritual birth certificate. We are all descendants of Adam and Eve. Let's see each other as equals, as partners, not less than we are, but equal to who we are, and sometimes greater than who we are. And I think if we see each other as members of that human family where there is a place for everyone at the table, we will find ourselves in a better place. Let's continue to expand the arena to open the doors as widely as possible for all to enter. Together, we'll make this a much better place for all to live. Thank you.
Amen.
And thank you, Rabbi. It's always a pleasure, a privilege to have you on. We absolutely love you. And I just want to go on record, we have to have you on more often, a lot more often.
You know,
my phone just went dead on that one. I just didn't hear that. Thank you so much.
You know the old show business line that never follow children, dogs, or Rabbi Potashnik.
You're in for a treat now, Joyce, with Rabbi.
Oh,
Kruger.
My goodness.
Trust me,
yes,
on this
I
one.
Know that.
By the way, I have found, interestingly, you know what, Joyce, I have found something very interesting. All of the rabbis that I've encountered named Greenberg are excellent. You know, we've had Sidney Greenberg years ago. We got Yitz Greenberg, right? We got Eric Greenberg. You show me someone named Greenberg, and I'll show you a very good rabbi. It's just, it's more than coincidence, so... All right. So I don't have any Greenberg.
And I'm brilliant, Rabbi Potasnik. I just want to say you are indeed one of the funniest people I know. I love telling you jokes, and I love how contemporary you are and all that you bring to the table. And Father Brian is on our show on Monday to speak out against anti-Semitism as well from the point of view of a pastor, of a priest.
How great is
so
that? How great is that, right?
Great,
the Catholic speaking out on anti-Semitism. This wasn't the chapter years ago. It's the chapter now.
And that's the work of... I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that... You know, we wrote that chapter after much pain, after much persecution, but we wrote it together.
Yes.
And that has to be the message. All right, thanks so much. Enjoy, Rabbi Greenberg. And Rabbi Greenberg, you try to enjoy Joyce.
Thank you. And that's about to love, Rabbi.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Bye-bye.
Folks, before I bring you to Rabbi Eric Greenberg, it's his first time on our show today. I just want to say if you go to JoyceBarryAndFriends.com and type in Rabbi Joseph Potasnik on the top right, you can access his prior shows as well. He's been our guest many, many times. And one more message before Rabbi Greenberg joins us, and that's a message from our health guru. Here's to your health Thursdays. The one and only Beverly Nadler will tell you why it's important and powerful for you to listen to our show every day.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we do ask that you partner up with us in that endeavor. Simply go to JoyceBarryAndFriends.com, and on the upper left of the homepage, you'll see my picture. And right under that, if you click follow, you will get an email on every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of our special shows, because if you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern, you can access all shows. We never delete any of them. They're all in our archives 24/7 for your listening pleasure. You can download them, you can share them, you can email them. So 24/7 in our archives, do become a listener and join the many, many hundreds that are very loyal followers of this show. Now, without further ado, let me introduce to you Rabbi Eric Greenberg. He was just referred to us by Rabbi Potasnik. As I said in the intro, if you missed it, he's a leading interfaith expert, communications and program director, and an international award-winning reporter. He had meetings with three Roman Catholic popes, St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict the 16th, and Pope Francis. I had asked Rabbi Greenberg for a brief bio, and what I got was 2 pages, single space. So I'm just sharing with you a couple of key points, although I must say that every point was extraordinary. But I do want to share this one in particular. Rabbi Greenberg was a national award-winning investigative newspaper reporter and editor with expertise in environmental and religion reported, honored by Investigative Reporters and Editors Society, a professional journalist, the Washington Journalism Center, the American Jewish Press Association.
You can stop there.
I don't want to. The New York State Press Association. He was awarded 2 academic fellowships by the Knight Center for Specialized Journalism in Environmental and Religion Reporting, and has been inducted in the Communications Hall of Fame at the State University College at Buffalo. The reason I really wanted to share all of that and how important that was in today's day and age, because I wanted to ask you, have you felt the effects, any ramifications from our new president knocking the media, talking about fake news? It's been really difficult on reporters. And so you have all those extraordinary honors. How has it been for you?
Well, this has been some life lesson for the media. There's been nothing like it. I used to cover politics. I worked at the Washington Bureau for the New York Daily News years back. And in fact, I know, and he's a colleague, the reporter for the New York Times, who has a physical disability. And we all saw that tape of Donald Trump as a candidate making fun of that reporter. I don't know if your listeners or if you've seen that tape.
I definitely saw it over and over
and I was mortified. He is a terrific reporter, an outstanding award-winning reporter, and he has a physical disability. To mock that was a first sign that there's something off here. To not only do that to a reporter, but to do that to a physically disabled person was quite shocking, and that seems like a lifetime ago. But it was only last year. The effect of what's going on of this White House calling the media enemies of the people, that's the language of tyrants. And I'll quote a great senator and a war hero who's also been on the receiving end of the current president, Senator McCain, who just the other day said that an attack on the media such as is happening is the first step towards tyranny. In our democracy, freedom of the press is essential for our democracy to be able to survive and to function well. So I do know friends of mine who are in the media, reporters who have been trying to figure out how to cover a White House that has labeled it an enemy. And there's a lot of strategy and thinking going on as to how the great media outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Miami Herald and USA Today, on and on, as well as radio and TV, how do you cover with professionalism this, which is essential? You need to keep that professionalism, and you need to stay with the mission. What is the mission of journalism? It's to get the best obtainable version of the truth, right? I mean, that's when I was a reporter, an investigative reporter. There was no ideology. You went where the facts took you. And if now we're living in a society where there are no facts, how do you proceed? Well, the answer number one is there are facts, and that has to be made clear to the American people. There are facts. The sun does rise. The moon, at night comes out. These are facts, and we need to get back to reality. But still, it's in the process of being figured out. To get to your point, how you cover this administration when their response to facts are just labeling it as fake news, because that's
just...
Oh,
and they came up with the solution. They have alternative facts. How extraordinary is that? How upsetting is that? It is mind-boggling that, like you said, it happened so long ago with that disabled journalist. To quote Maya Angelou, she said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. That was just the beginning. It seems so long ago because there's so much that took place after that. I printed out 22 pages, single space, of every lie that President Trump said, and then the truth right under it. 22 pages I printed out, and then I printed out about 25 pages, single space, of everyone he disparaged, every tweet about people that he condemned and that he knocked. And the only thing he has something good to say, of course, is about Putin. That's his model.
Well, you know, it's I have to tell you, the Holocaust incident of last week, I guess it's now 2 weeks ago, where the White House failed to mention Jews.
Yes.
During Holocaust Remembrance
Yes.
Day.
Yes, that was mind-boggling.
We've since learned that actually the word Jews was in there, but someone took it out.
That would have been Bannon.
And I you know, I can compare this to years ago. I did a story. It was the anniversary of the Holocaust, and DC Comics, you know, the Superman comic book. They did a special series on having Superman. You know, this is a comic book story. Go back in time and try to stop the Holocaust. Their intent was noble. Their intent was, and it was a very well done story. So, as a reporter who covered some of these issues, I read the stories, and I noticed that every time it referred to the story referred to Jews, they never used the word Jews. They used those people who Hitler, you know, was against, or some really convoluted construction of in order to avoid, it seemed to me, saying Jews. So I called up the author, the writer, as a reporter, and I said, you know, your story is wonderful, and let's talk about it, but what happened? Why do you never use the word Jews? And he said, listen, I have to tell you, I did, but the editor took it out, and I opposed it, but the editor of the comic book said, you know, it prevailed. So I wrote the story, and I called the editor, and I said, well, why did you take it out? He said, I didn't think it would be appropriate. So the stories came out, and it became a huge controversy for a few weeks, and the end of the story was that the comic book company, DC Comics, which is owned by Warner Communications, apologized and realized that was the wrong thing to do. You can't have talk about the Holocaust and whitewash that it was a systematic murder of the Jewish people. Here, the reason I tell this story is because they apologized. They realized that they made a mistake. And like I say, their intent to do the story was noble. Here, there was no apology. Here, when it was pointed out that the Jews were not erased from the press release, they came up with some excuse, and they defended it. And that's the difference of what's going on here. No apology.
We are in very, very scary times. It is just so startling with everything going on. Like I said, I have like 25 single spaces on every lie that comes out of Trump's mouth. And then the truth right under it, you know, and then with all the people, places, things, institutions he disparaged. Again, what Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And it is amazing to me that all the Republicans are more interested in their job and not offending Trump than speaking out for their country and their love of country, which is why I thought they all wanted to be in office in the first place.
Well, you know, Joyce, you see what's going on around the country with these town halls, well, at least the
yes.
Republican congressmen who are give them credit, are brave enough to actually hold a town hall and speak to their constituents. Those who aren't, I call that, I've been calling that, you remember John F. Kennedy wrote a book, I believe he won a prize, maybe even a Pulitzer Prize for Profiles in Courage back, you know, all those years ago. Well, I call these it Profiles in Cowardice. And we keep seeing this from those who are even afraid to talk to the people who elected them, who they represent. It's going on all around. But I want to get back.
Rabbi, you said you're writing a book on that or an
no,
article?
No, no, no. I said I refer to it. I refer to it. Someone could write it. In fact, with what you are collecting.
Oh, that is an awesome topic.
You could write the book called Profiles in Cowardice, and we have an example of that every day for the last year. The term that's being used, you know, is party before country. We see that on TV.
That would be awesome. I invite you to write. I'm still working on my autobiography.
maybe we could ask Rabbi Pitasnik to help us with it.
Yes, because that I would promote like crazy, that is a great title, and to single out who these people are. I just want to refer you folks to two shows. Again, in our archives, January 31, Dr. Barbara Tolo, we did a show called Democracy versus Idiocracy, and that's where we talked about alternative facts and what's going on with that, how they actually came up with that and believe it's true and deny everything else. And then on November 8th, we had Chaplain Oscar Smith. We did a great show called Electile Dysfunction. So I want to refer you folks to those two shows. Back to you, Rabbi. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say back to your question about reporting. You know, I have a lot of reporters still in the friends who are reporters and editors in the media and the newspaper business, which has seen a wonderful revival in the last several months. Subscriptions and are up at both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. People are thirsting for vetted, good reporting, which again is about getting the best obtainable version of the truth without ideology. And I have to tell you that among those friends who are Jewish, they got, as Rabbi Pitasnik referred to, hate mail over the last year. If they wrote a story, a factual story that was not liked by a Trump supporter, if your name was, you know, Joe Schwartz, and you've been a reporter for many years, and you just happened, you would never get a letter or a hate mail, or now in these days, emails and texts and Twitter tweets and all, referring to your religion or national, you know, it was just unheard of. In the last year, the ADL, where I was the national director for outreach and interfaith for many years, the ADL just put out a report several months ago detailing the level of hatred and anti-Semitism coming out against reporters whose names sound Jewish. Now, if you're writing a story, if you're writing a story about, I don't know, a cat stuck in a tree, and you write that story and your name is Jill Levy, why would someone attack you for your religion if they don't like the story you wrote? It's nuts. And here it is happening more than ever over the last year. And it's scary.
Yes. And when you said that anti-Semitism, Jewish people wasn't acknowledged at the Holocaust Memorial, look what you said that President Trump acknowledged what's going on in the last day or two, which he did. But do you know the pressure that went on him? Day after day, they kept saying, why isn't he saying something? So he did it under duress. He didn't do it from the heart. He did it because he was forced to do it.
Well, you know, I can't read, you know, there's an old Woody Allen joke about him being in a philosophy class and he cheated on the test. He looked into the heart of the student next to him. I can't see what's in his heart, but we do know what he says, and we do know his actions. And the president of the Anne Frank House here in New York, who was on the TV shows the last couple of days, basically said, yes, he read from a too little, too late, and he read from a prepared speech that really was not coming from his usually extemporaneous talk. But
yes,
on the other hand, now to be fair, as the head of the ADL, I believe Jonathan Greenblatt said yesterday, it's a first step. And as Rabbi Patazik said earlier, we do want him to succeed, because if he succeeds, we succeed. Now, the question, of course, is succeed in doing what? I think we have to
That's
be a little
I
more
was
clear
thinking.
About that.
Right.
You know?
Yes, it's
but,
exactly what I was thinking. That's what's so scary.
You know, but as the ADL said, it's a first step, and we need to encourage. This has to happen on a sustained basis, needing to speak out. And we'll see. I mean, we're in uncharted waters, and the vigilance.
But they're murky waters. The problem is very
uncharted,
murky.
Uncharted murky waters. Yes.
The one good thing that gives us a little hope is his daughter Ivanka converted to Judaism. She's an Orthodox Jew. She's married to someone that's very pro-Israel. And so, you know, there's that hope, because he's so tight with her, probably more than his wife, more than anyone. But as she has said in interviews, yes, she does speak up to him, and he listens when he chooses to and not all the time.
Well, I'm not so sure. I don't know if government runs it runs that way. So that's why I'm not sure what her title is at this moment, in the White House. And as you pointed out, the people in the White House who have the most power, people like Steve Bannon, have a history that can be verified and checked, and that's a very problematic history. So, we need to be very vigilant about these things, which brings us back to, what we talked about before. I think Rabbi Patazik talked about the need for allies, the need for people of different faiths and ethnicities, minorities joining together. And we're seeing that. And we're seeing that as a counter point to what's happening in Washington. And it's very heartening, because all the hard work that's been done, I could actually report some news to you. I looked at this a couple of minutes ago. I've been working in Queens, New York, putting together an interfaith rally. The borough of Queens in New York is probably the most diverse in the world. There's 130 different ethnicities, peoples from all over the world, different religions in this borough of New York City. And been working with Muslim leaders and Sikh and Hindus who are scared. If I tell you, Joyce, they are. I've met with them the last few weeks with some of my colleagues. They're scared to walk out to go to the grocery store because of the new immigration policies that have been introduced. They wear their hijab, and they're afraid to be attacked by white nationalists and haters. And we're now putting together a major rally, and today I just got confirmation a few minutes ago that it's going to happen, with people of all faiths and all ethnicities coming together and standing up and saying, no, this is not the America we know or that we want. And I think that these kinds of things give us some hope that we can mobilize and unite and basically fight back against policies that we think are not American.
Well, I do want to tell you, anything like that you can use the resources of this show for us to promote it, to let people know about it. Rabbi, you are always welcome back on this show. You are an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. One thing I want to add, if I could, this is not just America that this is going on. Obviously, if you look around the world, and one thing about traditionally about Americans, don't generally look around the world. There's the old joke for those who are in New Yorkers that in New York there's I think it's an old New Yorker cartoon, that anything like sort of across the Hudson River, that's like the rest of America we don't care about. Once the boundary of New York is left, nobody cares. Oddly enough, the president of the United States now is from New York. So it's kind of ironic. But what's going on in the world in the conservative move and the nationalist move, as we see in France and elsewhere, it's scary. And there needs to be more of a global movement as well. And I have to tell you, I was on a Middle Eastern TV show yesterday, where the head of dialogue at Al-Azhar University in Cairo, which is their, you know, theological center Islam in Egypt, and we talked about anti-Semitism. They were interested in finding out what's going on with the attacks on Jews in America. And the Dr. Zakzouk, who is the head of the center, former minister in Egypt, said, this cannot happen to any religion. And he stood up and said that he will support every faith community against these kind of attacks. And this is something new, and this is positive. And I think that if we can connect the good-willed faith leaders, both in the United States and around the world, and which is kind of the kind of work I've been doing, and connect us, we have more in common than we do. We have obviously these political differences, and there are some theological differences, but on the whole, there's so much more in common that we could talk about, that we can do together. I think this is the moment for that.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to share with us regarding anti-Semitism? You're at the battlefront. You know what's going on. We know what we hear, what we see, but there's so much unreported. I suspect it's a lot worse than we even know about.
Well, that's you raise a very good point. What we see, often the tip of the iceberg. As a reporter, I remember people may not know this, but the FBI does a hate crimes annual report. And as a reporter years ago, I said, oh, well, this is interesting. Here's these statistics, and it went up here and it went down there, and why? So, sometimes the easiest question is just to ask why. And I realized and found out that the requirement to report is not mandatory. It's voluntary. So when we see some of these stats, at least it was back then, when we see some of these statistics, as you're right, it doesn't necessarily represent the full measure of the incidents that are going on. So yes, we need to stay vigilant, and we need to stay united and build sustained positive relationships. As Rabbi Ptasnik said earlier, which is the kind of work he's been doing and I've been doing, and I think that this will be necessary. As Governor, we were both at this event yesterday with Governor Cuomo in New York, who has risen to the occasion and showed what a leader really does. And he convened a conference to discuss what he's going to do in reaction to the spike in hate. And he said, he doesn't expect this to be a short-term problem. And so we have to be prepared for the long haul. And I think that my message is, let's build those relationships. Let's keep them and get ready for the long haul.
I agree with what was said. I don't see it as short-term either, because it's just popping up all over. And it's just scary. When I started with a Nelson Mandela's quote, a never-ending battle just for the right to exist on the part of Israel, and all that is going around, the propaganda, the lies around that, of course, it's hand-in-hand with the anti-Semitism. So the strong message is, it matters not whether you take one step or 10, just take that first step and do your part on helping the situation and being a part of the solution, no matter what your faith, because if it starts in one place, it's spreads to the other like a cancer.
Absolutely. And your quote from before was from Niemöller was right on. So let's continue this dialogue. Let's continue working together. And hopefully the moral, goodwill people will prevail.
And Rabbi, I want to ask of you to please say a prayer for all of us. I always have the rabbis and the priests end with a prayer because it's very impactful.
Well, as we enter the Sabbath in a few hours, obviously I would like to wish a prayer for Sabbath peace for all your listeners. And for everyone, that there is a moment of reflection or a day of reflection and peace, that we can all take a rest from what's been going on in the world and be able to reflect and renew our energies. I think that's so important, and that we can see in our prayers the dignity in the other. And once we see that, we will see, as Rabbi Potasnik so eloquently said earlier, see that we all are created. Every religion has an aspect that we were all created by God, and that we should all see the dignity and the humanity in the other, and that will get us on the road to recovery.
Very beautifully stated. And folks, this is my prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. And folks, we ask you, we invite you to sing along with us, to dance along with us, and laugh along with us. And you can do that starting right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. God bless you.
Amen.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
And you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.